Mr. Dobson, reel 21.
So what were your overall impressions of Camp Casey?
Right, to me it was a good break from being up on the front line. Rest, you know, and recuperation, really. Sport and everything, you know, so the only thing that happened there was when I had the bad stomach, which I've told you about. But from that, we enjoyed the rest, you know, so really we were refreshed to go up again. We had to be ready.
Can you remember when you left Camp Casey?
Well, about the beginning of April, I think it was. So.
And you'd been there how long ago?
We'd had a few weeks there at Camp Casey, about 5 or 6 weeks, I think it was. We'd
had you any new drafts?
Yeah, there'd been a few in there. We had one or two. I think that's when I met my mate there where I used to play football in here, Ronnie Emerson. I think that was when he joined us. You know, then we had a few more come to the battalion you know, got up to strength again. So we're ready for what you call action.
Were these all national service as well?
Yes, I think they were. You know, we're out in the moment, yeah, they were. I would say the lot. You know, national service. And the regulars, what we had with, were, you know, I don't think we've got any more. So it must have been all national service. That's what I don't remember, different companies and that.
And you were still in A Company at this time?
Yeah, I was still in A Company headquarters, ready to go up, you know, arrested.
When did you find out you were going back to the front?
We generally get to know, a few days before and so we can pack up. Get the gear into shape, your rifle or whatever you had, or your Sten gun. All your gear ready. And you had a bit gear what you used to leave at the echelon, you know, where you could put there in a bag and leave it. You need to take it all up in the front line. You couldn't carry it.
Were you issued with any other kit?
Well, then I think we started, they were taking the winter stuff off with, and I think they were starting to issue a bit like summerish, you know, thinner. But we still had a lot of the winter stuff, because it was still cold. You know, it was severe, really. So we had to keep some of it.
What was the weather like at the time?
If I remember rightly, it wasn't bad. Because we're in this valley in Cape, you know, there, Casey. And to me, it was nice, you know, because there's a lot of sport in that. So really, it was canny. Couldn't grumble at it.
But what did you think about going back to the front again?
Well, you know, when you think about it, you had a good idea then, been in a few times. I think you didn't want to go, but you knew you had to go, put it that way, so I think you just resigned yourself to saying, well, that's it, that's going. And we knew about where we were going to.
I was just going to ask you if you knew.
Yeah, we knew about this one, it was the big one, you know. We didn't know what to expect, you know. They did get a lot of activity up that way, you know, back with the Fords and the Chinese.
This is point 355.
355, yeah, Little Gibraltar. So we didn't know really what to expect.
And how far away from Camp Casey was Little Gibraltar?
It was a few mile. We had a good ride, I remember, from Camp Casey up to Little Gibraltar, you know. We had to do it most of it during the day. And
what sort of transport?
With the Americans, with the American always had their transport. They were proper transporters. Seats down the side, you know, and some stand in the middle. We had to sit away during the day so that we got up that far for the nightfall for to make the change over, you know.
So it took you all day to get there?
Yeah, I would say. You know, a good breakfast and then away. So it was all travel.
And this was the whole battalion?
Yeah, the whole battalion, yeah. Everything moved.
So that must have been quite a sight, then, all that transport.
Yeah, boy. You know, because, it all moved together. If I remember right, it moved all together. You know, S Company and everybody. I think E Echelon and places like that, and the other one, B Echelon, they were away. They were there, in their place. It was really like the battalion. You know, companies that had to move then, like. But it was a big organisation, like. It was always the Yanks would move. They had the transport. So.
And how did you actually get into the line then?
Well, we had to wait.
At night time.
Yeah, we had to wait till night time. And you're talking about maybe it was a march here, about, I don't know, about a mile, mile and a half up to the rear front. Probably to get there during the night, like, you know, to get you in position into the early hours of the morning. I mean, it had to be done at night, the takeover. When we took over from the Americans, they had to stop there till we'd relieved them of the standing duties. And I mean, like, you know, and I mean, there'd be no patrols out, or maybe the odd one. And there was always something going on, you know, that was especially around that area. It was a hell of a battle around there, you know. There was always something going on.
Can you remember what it was like taking over from the Americans?
Well, you know what, they're free and easy, them blokes, you know. Hi, mate, you know, and all that, you know, the way they go on that. So, they were all right. They were good to you, really. But we always found, like, there were bad blokes for leaving a mess. You know, there's another tale that come from that. And it was always left to people like us to clean up. So it was always a mess after we took over. We heard different battalions on about it. You know, about being dirty, you know, soldiers and all that. They didn't give a jot, say one. You know.
Did you have much contact with the Americans when you took over them?
Just, why, like, the company headquarters, really, you know, we took over, they had a company headquarters as well, naturally. Just a bit talk to them, and they were glad to get out, because they'd been hit on there before we took over. And they were glad to get out, like. They'd had one or two killed and all that, you know. And, of course, it was, it is like Gibraltar. I've been to Gibraltar itself, and it is like Gibraltar. It was a massive one, you know, a hill. Even to get up it, I mean, you had to be fit. But what they had what they call the flying fox. It was like an aerial thing, you know, to take stuff up to the top. It was that far up.
On a cable?
Yeah. Like a cable car. It was a long cable car. They put the stuff in, you know, to send to the top. Rations and everything.
And how did you get up?
We had to mark up, you know, up and down, you know, the valley and up to get till we got to the top. I'll be honest to you, you weren't supposed to, but I did have a ride up on the what you call the Flying Fox later on. But it was eerie. You know, you were stuck on that aerial going up, you know, and black dark. But that's where we got the grey stuff up to the top for them.
So just going on about the night you took over, it must have been a little unnerving to hear the Americans telling you they were so pleased to get off.
Oh, yeah, I know that. Like I say, I didn't last very long up there on 355, like, but I think I must have been frightened, you know, the way all the lads were, like. They took a hammer and a nut. I forget how many, they did tell how many dead and that, and lost. In front of them there, I mean, it was the biggest valley. And I mean, when that point, 355, Chinky wanted it, and the North Koreans, you know, they wanted it, because that, it dominated the valleys, right away around.
Well, describe the terrain a little bit later. I just was wanting to concentrate on you actually taking over from the Americans. Do you know which unit you took over from?
It was the 2nd Division. USI, 2nd Division, aye. They were all right. I mean, I did lose a bit of faith in Americans, I'll be honest. But, you know, it was all firepower. When them lot, you know, bragging and that, but I don't know, some I got on with, the Blackies weren't so bad.
Were they coloured soldiers in the unit?
Oh yeah, aye. Some of the Blackies was better than better than the Whites, you know, some of them, they seemed nice. And they, you know, they had nothing to brag about, you know, so really they were all right.
Would you have any idea what percentage were coloured?
No, let's see. Well, you know, I'm saying I would.
Just one or two.
I wouldn't say there was a lot. You did meet, you know, the odd ones. But wasn't? I didn't think it was a lot many. You know, not really. More white, I would say. You know, than them.
How long did the process of taking over last?
Well, when the major talking to their major, I'm taking it was a major, they would leave, but it was just before dawn, so they could get out the line and away back. So you're talking about a few hours, you know, he's showing them the in front of you, you know, the hills, so they were all marked, and what they'd been, where they'd been getting the trouble from and things like that. I think that's what they'd be talking about. Where they expect it from, or, you know. So, really, they left, if I remember, about just before dawn to get back. But you were a long trail back, you know.
How were you allocated your positions, your sleeping positions, your firing positions?
And well, the Sergeant Major and the 2IC, Barini, they told me where to go, you know, take over the Hutchies. Like I say, I only had about 3 days, I think, with them. So really, I couldn't tell you much about where I got put there. You know.
Well, going back to the terrain itself, you described it as being like Gibraltar.
Yeah.
Big. It was obviously quite a hill then.
Oh yeah, hell of a hill. It dominated. When I did go back to Korea, you know, it's up in there, North Korea. And from where we were at, you're talking about a kind of few mile. And right in the distance, it was pointed out to you, and you could see it. 355, it said big. You know, it was a big in mind. I see it dominated all the landscape right around it. That's what dominated the war like.
And the trenches, where were they in relation to the hill?
Well, really, they were just like just back off the top. I mean, this is the hill where we supposed to have jumped up, hip hip hooray, when the Queen was. You know, the Queen's celebration when she was crowned? No way. We're just back from the top.
Back, you mean back just Allied side of the
hill? Yes.
Our side.
You know, our side. Just off the top. I mean, you had fighting trenches, you know, around. You had to have them, right? And I'm just going by memory now, like, you know, like I say, just about 3 days. I did have a little bit of a walk around, I think. When the major in the trenches was deep, really deep, because they did get a battering. And the fighting trenches, they were deep as well. I just snuffed to get up.
So could you see the Chinese positions from?
Oh yeah, yeah. You were looking down on them. That's why you had to be careful, you know, snipers.
So as the main trench was slightly on the back side of the hill.
Yep.
And the firing trenches were cut into
farther
the,
in,
the,
yeah.
To the front of it.
Into the front, from the main trench.
So you were only in sight of the Chinese in the front trench? The
yeah,
trench.
You had to keep out the way during the day and that. We were down the bottom, company headquarters. That's where we were, like. And on a night, I believe the major used to go up to the Hutchie, you know, the underground, on the top. If I remember right, like I say, I didn't spend enough time up. But I think that's where he went on a night, the major. Loveridge and Barini, like.
What was the terrain like?
It was very rough there. A lot of there was bushes, you know, because you didn't get many bushes really out there, you know, they'd all been blown up. There was bushes and boulders and that where they'd been blasted. And a big, I remember it was like a big dip before you hit the main hill. You know, it was a bit of a valley for you, the main hill. So it was very steep. I mean, anybody climbing it, you know, any of the lads who had been here, they would have told you to get up it, like. It was steep, mind.
Was there any other cover?
No, not really. That was our side of it, you know. On the other side, there was, like, bushes, you know, down into the valley. Not many. They're all being blasted, isn't it?
Were there any other significant features apart from Hill 355?
No, I believe one of the companies was to the left. It was a smaller hill, you know, and one to the right. It was a smaller one. Air company was up, was not new, you know, how was it on? They were up on the top, right on the top.
So how, what sort of length of the line did the battalion hold?
How are you talking? Thinking back, I would say about anywhere up to about half a mile, I would say, the battalion, you know, getting on towards that.
Was this all over the hill?
Yeah, the sides of the hill and the other ones, you know, at the side.
So they covered ground at the side of 355
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, we had the companies there as well. And this time what I'm talking about, your company was on the top. So...
And a company to the left and a company to the right.
Yeah. And I think it was just behind 355 was this, you know, the reserve company for the takeover.
Who was that?
I don't know. I don't know. It could have been here. Well, we were on the top of your company. So it could have been B, C or D. You know, one of them. I didn't know which one was which, you know, went to them places.
And what did the line consist of? You described the front line trench with its firing trenches going out to the front.
Mm-hmm.
And what was behind that? You mentioned that the company headquarters was further down.
Yeah, we were farther down. That's where we held the cookery, cooking and all that, you know, did all the cooking and down there in the valley at the bottom of the hill. And that's where the spare ammunition, things like that, was all kept. And Ronnie Taylor had like a little bit of a naffy he used to run. Just things like that, you know, just company headquarters. So, I think we had a signal there at the bottom, you know, you had them on the top as well, but the other one there as well, for the direct traffic and all that, you know, with shells and things like that going in. So it was pretty busy down the bottom, right?
What about artillery and mortars? Another supporting...
Yeah, they were just like farther back. And you had an artillery bloke up on the top directing artillery as well, you know, through the grapevine nut. So that was well organised. And the Korean porters lived there at the bottom. You know, they lived up there with us.
How did you find the Korean porters?
Right, some of them were, you know, you're right there. Some wanted to learn English. You used to get the odd stubborn one, you know. They didn't want to do anything. But there was always one in charge, Kim. And he stuck with our company all the time, like. We used to see to them, like, he would make them work. He was a bit of a lazy bugger as well, like, but he made them work, you know, because they looked up to him being in charge. But there were some decent ones, you know. Remember one, I don't know what it was at that position, but he was a big lazy bugger, you know. And he'd been bending over, and Kim went and gave him a kick right up the arse. You know, well, I didn't think it was there 355, but I remember that. And he was all right after that, like. Because, I mean, we were in charge, really, and but Kim was the one that was in charge of them, you know. You might have about 8 or 9 for to do the work for you.
What was their role?
Just carrying rations up to the top. Take rations back if we couldn't get back on a jeep or anything like that. Just helping out things, you know, in the cookhouse. Things like that. Anything wanted carrying. That was their job.
Were there any in a fighting role with the company?
No, they had no guns or nothing. I mean, you did have the Korean, the ROKs, the Republic of Korea's Army, like, but they weren't part of it. They were at another part of the line, the Koreans. So, no, they were just porters. Gooks, porters, anything. Sometimes worse. You know, it just depends how you feel. But they were all right, they wanted to learn English a lot, you know.
There weren't any real problems with them, were there?
No, not really. I tried they lived off rice and was like a dry fish. And they used to boil it up, you know. And I did try it, like, but the rice wasn't bad, but, oh, God, the fish. How the hell eat that? I don't know. But never mind, that was, you know, they were all right.
Whereabouts were the Chinese then in relation to this position?
Well, really, actually, the one very far in front of the little Gibraltar, where I remember. Like, see, I didn't get up, you know, I've been there just about 3 days. They weren't very far in front. We just, like, you know, over the brow of the hill, a little valley. It was only a little valley. And no, I wouldn't say they were very far away. You know, not that far.
And what was between? What was no man's land like?
No, it was just like the normal what we'd had. You know, I didn't know whether it was a little river or not. Not sure. It was just like a valley. You know, they had the hills farther out, but 355 was looking down on them, you know. That's what they didn't like. That's why they were always trying to get this place. They had took it before, you know, before we got there, like. There had been some hellish battles right in there. But, not when the Durham's like, you know, we skirmishes throughout the month.
Just going back to the trenches themselves, you'd started to describe them, you said they were very deep. What was the ground like?
Well, then it was like, it was still like hard, you know, when the winter and everything. So that was just like normal.
Was it muddy or rocky?
Just depends if we got any snow or rain or would be, you know, slushy and all that. But I think them 3 days I was up was hard. So after that, I mean, they did get rain and that, you know. So it would be messy, like.
How deep were the trenches?
Ooh, you're talking of anywhere up there, you know, 5-6 foot. When being right up on the top, there had to be, you know, to hide you, you know.
Yeah, and how wide?
You're talking about, I would say about 3 foot. See, it's about 3 foot wide. Anywhere, you know, it just depends. What place is wider, you know.
Was it easy to move around?
Well, it was, yeah, because they couldn't see you, like, you had to still be careful, like, when you come to where you went through into the fighting trenches. Like I say, I didn't have much to do, and just what I can remember, like, a little bit.
How were they defended? Were the sandbag barbed wires, minefields?
Well, you always had barbed wire in front of you, you know, on the stand patrols, and they were sandbagged, you know, and when the slits in and the ammunition. Hand grenades and that, you know, which had to be cleaned and that regularly, you know, to keep them in working order. So I was sandbagging that, and it was well sort of camouflaged, the slit trench and the barbed wire. So it was all right, like.
What was the company headquarters like? Can you describe that?
Well, when I got there, it was a bit of a mess down there. And, after I came out, but where, you know, A echelon, my mate, Wilfie Hall from Sunland, he was cleaning up with a couple of Korean veterans, you know, Koreans, and he got blown up. He got killed, Wilfie. He's from Sunland. So, really, the Yanks always left, like I say, they left a mess at some places, you know.
So how was he killed?
Seemingly, if I remember what I was told there, I think it must have been the Korean porter. There was grenades in that line about. He must have pulled one.
Accidentally?
Well, he just pulled it and dropped it and went up. They were killed and Wilfie was killed. But that was when I'd come back to the echelon and I got to know, like, he's a cunny lad, really. He's a proper joker, you know. Because we never found out who the hell he knew a joke. And when he was killed, well, his mail was still coming, you know, from his mother and father. And we had to open them, you know, and there was joke books in. And that's how we That's how he's, you know, I always had a joke to tell you. So, he was a miss, like he's a good lad, Wolf. Oh, sorry, I did get like a little bit of a service on from him with the phone about the body of some, you know, not very much blown up. So, that was why I didn't like the Yanks in a way. Turned us against them, very a lot of we did. But you had to get on with it, hadn't you?
So you think that there was grenades probably left over from the Americans?
Yeah, I mean, the Durhams and the British regiments liked the place clean, which saved you from rats and everything like that, you know, and things, you know. And that's what he'd been starting to do, clean up. And this is what had happened. It could have been the other mate, Alan Foster, in company headquarters. But Alan had to, he was on the toilets now, yeah, you know I was telling you. I think Alan had to go away and do his job, and that's when Wilfie had to go on. And that's when he got killed. He's a good bloke.
So when you took off from the Americans, what state were the trenches and the Hoochies in?
Well, I cannot really tell for up on the top, really. But I didn't think they were left clean and that, you know. I mean, the Durhams had a reputation for this, leaving the place clean. And I don't think they were very clean, like.
What was the rubbish lying around?
Yeah, you know, the tin of bean things, they would throw them away and things like, oh, you hadn't to do that. You know, we had to put it in one place and it was took away at night. And,
of course, that would attract things like vermin.
Vermin, we were always told about this. They didn't seem to bother. That's why I didn't, like I say, I turned against them. You know, after Wolfie anyway, especially after Wolf.
What were the Hoochies like?
For a little bit, I can remember, they'd been well blasted and that, you know, but they were still livable underground. I'm not sure whether where Ronnie Taylor had one, it was on the top of the ground, it wasn't underground. And I think the ones on the top, well, they were all underground as well, like, I mean, well under, because they used to get blasted, you know. So really, sheer deeper than the other places we'd been to, I would say, you know, farther in.
Were they generally built under the ground? How were they generally
constructed? Like wood, timber, and like a bit of a timber roof, you know, to keep it up, you know, solid. Maybe timber on the side, or just like boxwood or something like that, whatever was handy. So they were often on the same, you know. But I forget now what the one I was like went down on the bottom. I can't remember it now, really, that one. Normally I can remember them, but I cannot remember that one. Let's say only 3 days or something. So I think they were livable, put it that way. But that was it. You know.
What about sleeping arrangements in the Hoochies?
Well, you did your work at night just to see them again, you know. You start to work at night and sometimes you would get a couple of hours off, but you get a bit kip.
What were you sleeping on?
You had your sleeping bags and like these iron things, bedroom wire, you know, and your sleeping bags on top.
How many in a Hoochie?
I think I was on my own there again. On 355. I think I was. But the others, I mean, you generally get about 2, 3, maybe it's 4 in the companies, you know. You might get about 4 in one. Sometimes more. Just depends. But that's what they were made up of. Why your beds when you're sleeping bag. And I mean, you never took your boots off or anything like that at night, you know. You just got in. If you could get in. During the day, you could, you know. You know, it was quieter.